Get your rain boots ready. It is almost time for the 65th annual Dollar Bank Three Rivers Arts Festival. For 10 days, the Cultural District downtown, and this year, the Rachel Carson Bridge, will be flooded with hundreds of artists, plus tons of food and beverages. It is our city's biggest, longest art party of the year and includes free performances. This year's headliners are Ben Folds, Lost Lonely Boys, Doom Flamingo, Martha Redbone, our local symphony, and so many more. It's all going down May 31st through June 9th, noon to 9 p.m. every single day. Find all the details and a map at trustarts.org/TRAF. Today on CityCast Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh Public Schools is suing the county, and it all goes back to taxes. We're looking at the cleanup process after last week's flooding, and after reviewing the deer management pilot, the city's going to be calling for more bow hunters. Plus, we are ready to kick off the weekend with another made-up yet delightful local holiday. It's April 12th, the Friday News Roundup. I'm Megan Harris, and here's what Pittsburgh's talking about. I'm with CityCast Mallory Falk and Sophia Lowe. Good morning. Have you recovered from the eclipse?
Yes. It was great. It was amazing. Mallory, sorry. I know after me and Megan started raving about the experiences, you regretted not traveling anywhere.
I know. I made the wrong call just watching from my own backyard.
Although I think you got a better view than I did in upstate New York. It was completely clouded over for the actual corona part. Like, I could see everything until then, and then nothing actually during it. But the darkness part was really cool.
I got totality. I got the corona all in the Panera parking lot of Warren, Ohio.
You win for least festive but most strategic experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, today is also a holiday here in Pittsburgh, if you don't know. Happy 412 Day. Do y'all know what this is? I feel like Francesca's really done the Lord's work on this team of educating us all.
Yeah, this is super cute, especially because I don't think I've ever lived anywhere or any city that makes like a big deal out of their area code.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I'm in favor of celebrating our other one, too, 724. Like, some cities don't have an area code that can even do this for one day a year, and we have two area codes that would work, July 24th and April 12th. It would be really fun.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is mostly just a day to be proud of our city, get excited. I always think it's so great that Pittsburghers will take any and every excuse to make a big deal out of Pittsburgh. But if you actually want to do something to celebrate, there's going to be a 412 Fest at Bakery Square with lots of food and mascots making an appearance.
And another one, the Museum of Illusions is offering a special admission price, $4.12. But of course, there are things to do around the city every day. You don't need a holiday to get out in your community. So if you're looking for stuff, for events, for ways to volunteer and pitch in, make sure you're subscribed to our Hey Pittsburgh newsletter, because Francesca DeBecco has all kinds of good stuff every day there.
Yeah, Francesca always has such great recommendations. I could listen to her list fun things all day, but we also have news to talk about. So, Megan, you've been off work and out of town for a few days now. I don't know if you missed it, but there was a massive flood while you were gone.
I did see that. The photos and especially the drone videos were incredible. Also really fun to watch when you are not here having to deal with the traffic.
Yeah, that's fair. I saw pictures of Pittsburgh make it to Reddit's front page and people thought there was a canal downtown and then realized it was a whole flooded road.
I mean, the bathtub is weird, like, as a concept.
I was waiting for someone to do one of those Photoshops of, like, dolphins or alligators floating around in the bathtub.
Don't manifest it. If you say alligators, they will come from the Kiskew River to downtown.
Chompers reappears.
Yeah, absolutely. But now, of course, that the floodwaters are gone, it's time for one of my all-time favorite Pittsburgh pastimes, flood cleanup. It looks like crews have already been doing some stuff here and there, but it usually takes a while to get both downtown and the North Shore and then all of our extraneous little river communities fully cleaned up again. It's just a long process.
It's got to be so much work. I've never really thought about how long this would take.
And I imagine it's pretty expensive.
Yeah, I've never seen a full accounting, like by money, of all of the cleanup efforts and what it takes, but it's got to be pricey, right? Although luckily it is shared by a bunch of different organizations. So I think it's always kind of interesting to like think about the logistics of how our, like how we get to have nice things, you know? So PennDOT usually handles the bathtub area. That's the spot between Grant Street and the Fort Pitt Bridge. So trucks usually get in there right away to street sweep and flush away all the mud. So that typically happens before cars are even let back through.
And I'm always surprised by how quickly this happens. Like last week, downtown crested at more than 28 feet on Thursday, and then the bathtub was back open the next day on Friday.
Just in time for baseball.
Oh, okay. Makes sense. Makes sense why they do it so fast.
Well, I mean, it just worked out that way this time, right?
Yeah, but that was not the case with the 10th Street bypass, that road along the Allegheny River that flanks downtown.
Yeah, and that road gets handled by the City Department of Public Works. Then, of course, there's the trails, like all of the like pedestrian and cycling paths. Those are typically spruced up by the organization Friends of the Riverfront, which is like no small task.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the trails always look the most dramatic. There's just so much mud and gunk. Yeah. But every year you see stories where officials there remind us that flooding there is normal. They're designed to take it and recover just fine.
Yeah, and Friends of the Riverfront actually has a pretty cool map feature. I don't remember seeing it in previous years. I don't know when they got it, but it's on their website. So you can check on alerts or detours. You can also just see normal stuff like where the bathrooms are. As we're recording, it says that the only spot still down from the flooding is the North Shore walkway, like along the stadiums and all that. That's actually my favorite spot to post up during a good spring cleaning like this.
Megan, I gotta ask why.
Because of one very special feature that I feel like looks most dramatic along that walkway, municipal power washers. They are so satisfying to watch in action.
I've never seen this, and I don't know whether you're convincing me to, or I still don't get the point.
It's so, have you ever seen power washing videos? Am I the only person that really likes this?
This is your ASMR.
I like organizing videos better.
I like to watch like a really simple task that brings order to something that lacked order before.
This doesn't surprise me at all.
So they have like the street sweepers and the power washers, like the guys with the tanks on the back, and they just clean everything up. It gets rid of all the goose poop. We get a nice clean slate to start the baseball season. It's great. It's the best part of a flood.
I can see how it would be calming and satisfying to watch the goose poop, dissipate, fade away.
Go away. Yeah. And sometimes they get really ambitious. I don't know if they're supposed to, if they just do it on their own. They'll clean up the city steps, which also get real gross after a few years without this.
That's really nice. And we've talked about some of the roads, but what about Point State Park? I guess because of the name, that'd be the state.
Point State Park. Yes. I feel
just
like people forget.
Yeah.
I feel like people always forget that the Point is actually a state park until, you know, they're trying to plan a multi-day festival or concert series and we get told no. Yeah, fountain cleanup and all of that falls to the State Department of Conservation and Natural Resources. So once again, not a small thing to clean up all of that bright, pretty new tile down there.
But it seems like they've, you know, done a pretty good, quick job. Honestly, it's hard to tell because early spring in Pittsburgh is not like our prettiest season. We're not at our best.
I'm seeing a lot of cherry blossoms around. I like those.
And there's no lanternfly carcasses yet. Like, I feel like there's like the dusty weeks in late summer when like all this wetness would really be appreciated.
Yeah, just as long as the rain doesn't also bring landslides.
Yeah, there were a few outside the city, but it seems like we got luckier here. So fingers crossed.
Yeah, so far. The show today is brought to you by an incredible local resource, AIDS Free Pittsburgh, and their pledge to end the HIV/AIDS epidemic in Allegheny County by 2030. If that is a cause that is close to your heart, make sure you're around for their biggest event of the summer, the 6th annual Too Hot for July. It is a party, but it is also a chance to get confidential HIV and STI testing for free, plus info on the incredible preventative medicines we have now to keep yins happy, healthy, and feeling your most confident out on the town. So come on out to Allegheny Commons East Park on Thursday, May 30th. Yes, July is in the name, but the event is in May. Don't get confused. May 30th from 4 to 10 p.m. There will be DJ sets, a health fair and marketplace, a ballroom-inspired dance battle, cash bar, food trucks, and more. Plus, a performance by Tony Award winner Alex Newell, a.k.a. Unique, from Glee. This is all thanks to True Tea Pittsburgh and so many folks doing the good work out here in the community. So do not miss out. Learn more at TooHotForJuly.com. Moving on, Pittsburgh Public Schools sued the county this week. I feel like we knew this was coming. Mm-hmm. Like, the district has been threatening to sue for a while, yeah. But it just officially filed suit in the Court of Common Pleas on Tuesday. Mallory, I know you've been following this. Always a fun entry back into reporting. Uh-huh. Can you explain what's happening?
Yeah, so PPS filed the suit against Allegheny County and also our county executive, Sarah Inamorato, and it wants to force them to do a countywide property reassessment, so reassess the value of all of the properties here.
I feel like this has been a big internal point of conversation this week, and it's embarrassing, but I'm just going to say it. I don't know what that means.
You're not the only one, Megan.
The phrase reassess the value of properties just does not feel like English to me. Mm-hmm. Can you describe it in real terms?
Yeah, I will do my best here. But it's essentially just making sure that people's tax bills match the value of their homes or their other properties. So Let's say I bought a house in Lawrenceville 10 years ago. Right now, my tax bill would still reflect what property values were like in Lawrenceville at that time. And obviously, property values in that neighborhood have skyrocketed since then. So, you know, if somebody moved onto my hypothetical block now, they'd probably be paying a lot more in taxes. So if you reassessed my house, you'd figure out what it's worth or what its fair market value is right now.
I feel like all properties have gone up in value, so it's interesting to me that there are any in the whole city of Pittsburgh that may have gone down.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, advocates are saying that the inverse can be true. Like, if you bought a house in a neighborhood that has seen a lot of disinvestment over the past 10 years, because remember, this is also the county, not just the city. You know, if property values have really gone down in your neighborhood, then you might be in a house that's overvalued and your tax bill would be way too high. And so, you know, what people who push for a countywide reassessment say is right now people in high value properties are underpaying and people in low value properties are overpaying, and it's just not a fair system.
You know, I bet another thing that's factoring into this is just how many people, because we've done shows about this here on CityCast, if you listen a lot, like, a lot of people bought houses 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago and just have not moved, like, especially the boomers. They own so many Pittsburgh houses. So, like, if you've not had a reassessment in a long time and you've not moved, then, yeah, you're probably right. You're probably, like, not paying as much in taxes. Mm-hmm.
So what's triggering this lawsuit for reassessing all these properties? Why now?
So we're going to delve much more into property reassessments on the show next week. So this is just a broad overview. We're going to bring on someone who has a lot more expertise in the issue than I do.
And I will ask all of my really foolish, ignorant questions. Yes.
If anyone else has foolish or foolish in your mind only questions, you can send them our way so we can make sure to ask them for you. Our number is 412-212-8893. But essentially, there was a lawsuit a couple years ago that's allowed some property owners to appeal their assessments, you know, if they think they're properties being valued too high or taxed too high, to potentially lower their tax bills. So a bunch of people have filed successful appeals, and that includes homeowners, but also people who own big buildings downtown, like skyscrapers and commercial properties. And all of this means that there is less tax revenue and less money for the school district.
I mean, if you look at those buildings downtown, like, just those alone, that has got to be a huge hit.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, in the last few months, a bunch of big buildings have been reassessed, and now they're allegedly at least worth less. So you've got the U.S. Steel Tower.
That's the black, rusty one, like the tallest one in the skyline. I'm going to...
Thank you, Megan. Much appreciated.
I saw Sophia's face.
Yeah. I mean, Sophia, you're not the only Pittsburgher who doesn't know things by their formal proper name. So I appreciate the interjection, Megan. Keep them coming, because we've got three Gateway Center.
That would be the one behind the hotel next to the Point.
Mm-hmm. The tower at PNC Plaza.
That's the big slopey one that they just finished building in like 2015-ish.
And then PPG Place, pretty iconic spot.
Yes, Reflective
That's
Castle.
That's the one I knew by the name alone.
So those and then some others are ones that, you know, have been reassessed. And anyway, if the property is worth less, that's a lot less tax money that's going toward a bunch of public services, including public education.
It's really strange to me to think that these giant buildings are suddenly less valuable. I know that downtown has taken a hit since the start of the pandemic. Fewer people are coming downtown to work, so there are a lot of empty offices. So are these property owners saying because of all of that, their buildings are less valuable?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do they agree with that? It's such a weird headspace to like have like these big centers of business be like, I guess we're worth less. It's fine.
I mean, they've at least so far been winning these arguments. So, you know, they're resonating with someone who's making the decisions. But there's, you know, other stuff at play here, including a court ordered change in something called the common level ratio, which is used to determine property values. Again, we will talk more about that next week. I'm going to hand that off for somebody else to explain.
Unfortunately for me to try to decipher.
But like I said, all of this means that there's just less of a tax base for the school district in the future. And then on top of that, the district potentially has to hand back millions of dollars in property tax refunds. So right now, it's,
that's the craziest part to me is just the concept of the refunds.
Yeah, you don't think about like a public school system doling out tax refunds, right? Yeah, right now it's possibly on the hook for $7.4 million. But that is just for the past couple of years. And this complaint that was just filed says it could add up to $10 million when you look at appeals filed for the 2024 tax year. So that's, yeah, that is a lot of money for a school district to have to pay back.
Once you say $10 million, I do get why PPS has decided to file this lawsuit.
Yeah. And I mean, we're in a state where districts really, really rely on property taxes to fund schools to such an extreme degree that like last year, the Commonwealth Court said that the way we do it is unconstitutional.
Right. I mean, this judge ruled that the way we fund our schools creates this huge gap between the type of education you can get in a wealthy district with high property values and in a poor district with low ones. And, you know, she found that this gap is just so extreme that it's actually illegal.
And the state legislature is supposed to be coming up with a new funding system.
Good.
This is so frustrating. Other states have good ones and they're so straightforward and they make sense. I don't know why we have to reinvent the wheel here. Anyway, it'll probably take years and years because it involves our state legislature. So for now, this is the funding system we have.
So then in the meantime, what does PPS want to accomplish with this lawsuit?
Yeah, so it wants to force the county to do a countywide property reassessment, like I said. Pennsylvania is the only state that doesn't just regularly schedule property reassessments. In other states, it's this routine thing. But the last time Allegheny County did a property reassessment was over a decade ago in 2012. And that was after a court order. And that's why, you know, Megan, you brought up people who bought their houses like 30, 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. If we were having these regular property reassessments, then we wouldn't be in a situation where suddenly taxes are going to go up like astronomically because they would have just gradually increased over time.
Yeah. And then Pittsburgh Public and other school districts, because this is countywide, would be able to collect money and maybe not feel like they're in such dire straits.
Right. And, you know, at the school board meeting last week, we got a sense of the kind of shape PPS is in right now. The district CFO said it's expecting to deplete its fund balance by 2026.
Uh-oh.
I feel like that's such weird language. A fund balance is typically like a cushion, so they won't be in the red exactly, but they will maybe be uncomfortably close to it.
Okay, that makes sense. I don't want my checking account of like equal money out as what goes in. It needs to grow. Like I'm a little dragon sitting on my hoard.
And school districts also always have access to capital, at least to some extent, because they can raise taxes or they can borrow money at lower rates than like regular humans can. I recognize that that can be really hard to do politically, but those are options that school districts have that like the general public just doesn't. At any rate, I feel like the district has been sounding the alarm about this for such a long time, not just about its property taxes, but like just the fact that they feel like they don't have enough money and resources to adequately educate city kids. Mm-hmm. And clearly a lot of parents feel the same way. There are just so many reasons for that, I know, but it's just, this is not a new problem.
Yeah, I mean, even just the buildings themselves. At that board meeting, the head of operations said that 50 of the school district's buildings need major repairs urgently, and the district is considering consolidating buildings, which I know, like, we've had rounds of that in the past already.
Yeah, I mean, and that's not even speaking to the quality of education. That's just making sure that the building itself is, like, good enough for kids to be in it. I also wonder, like, if they could sell some of the ones that they've already consolidated, you know, like they just are sitting on empty ones. I don't know.
That's a good question. WESA and Public Source have been doing some good reporting on all of this, too. But yeah, the prospect of losing revenue and handing over millions of dollars, it just isn't a great one. I saw in a WESA story that the district's solicitor said if the situation is not stabilized, the district cannot continue to fund the early childhood, preschool, and school programs that are essential.
So has the county responded to the lawsuit yet?
Sarah Inamoretto's spokesperson, Abigail Gardner, said the administration has no comment on the specifics of the lawsuit, but that, quote, any reassessment must be revenue neutral and not a backdoor tax hike for the people of Allegheny County and should protect seniors and low-income homeowners in the process. I know that's something that Inamoretto has talked about for a while, that if this countywide reassessment were to happen, she would want protections in place so that people don't end up losing their homes if they can't afford these massive tax hikes all at once.
Yeah, I mean, Inamoretto even told us a few weeks ago on a previous CityCast Pittsburgh podcast that she would support a countywide reassessment. But it's also been very clear that she is not going to be the one who orders it. I can't say I blame her. The last time a county executive here was the figurehead for one of these, he only served one term. It does not serve a politician to be the one to order all their would-be donors to pay the county more money against their will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not the most popular position. You know, she and Mayor Ed Gainey were on WESA recently urging state lawmakers to be the ones scheduling these regular property reassessments.
But both of them used to be state lawmakers. Like, I heard that and I was just like, couldn't you have done that if you'd wanted to?
That is a very fair criticism, Megan. You know, they were stressing, like, this is the way it works in every other state, so just make this a routine thing and that doesn't fall on local leaders. But you are right. If they had done this when they were state lawmakers, it wouldn't be falling back on them right now.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, this also seems like that's an argument for having regular reassessments so that if your taxes are going up, they're doing so gradually instead of skyrocketing every 12 years or whenever they decide to do a reassessment.
Well, Mallory, like you said, we're going to be talking a lot more about property reassessments on the show next week, including how we got here in the first place. So stay tuned for that. And we'll definitely be keeping an eye on this whole Pittsburgh Public Schools lawsuit, too. So expect more conversation about that, too. One more news item before we go. Something that you're really into, Sophia, updates on the deer bow hunting pilot program that the city, I guess, wrapped up not too long ago.
Exactly. Yeah, they just finished. I am always super fascinated by fuzzy creatures and especially fascinated that the city's plan to manage the deer overpopulation problem was looking for 30 archers to hunt in the parks. Sounds
everything
like
about
a video
this
game.
Just is still so nuts to me. Yes, a video game. That's the perfect analogy.
But this bow hunting pilot program was successful. So the city's going to continue doing this to manage the deer population and actually even expand this to more parks.
Okay, expansion. But first, I want to hear about how this program, this last one, actually went. Like, how many deer did they get? How many people participated? Like, the first couple weeks, I remember us talking about this, and it went so slow. But then I guess the numbers ticked up. Where'd they land?
Yeah, so again, 30 archers in this program. And then the city shared that in total, 108 deer were, quote unquote, harvested.
Hate it.
That's the word they use. I guess, you know, we're trying not to say kill.
They were killed. You can just say
yes,
the deer got killed.
The deer are, in fact, dead. And this was in Frick.
Too fine a point on it, Sophia.
Well, that's what happened. But this took place in Frick and Riverview Parks. And some good news that comes out of this is that local food banks got 59 deer as donations, and this came out to a total of 9,440 meals. So I think that part's a win.
Mallory, I don't know if you caught that when you were off. So part of this was about food donation. So there's a way to harvest the deer in such a way that they can be donated to food banks and be distributed to people. One assumes meat-eating people.
Yeah, that does seem like a win. You know, something I remember being concerned about at the time, because they weren't like closing the parks when the archers were hunting. And so to me, this just seemed ripe for like a dog getting struck, a little kid getting struck, something really going wrong. But I saw on the facts and figures page that there were no public safety issues. At least that's what the city says. You know, a lot of homes are around the edge of Frick and Riverview Parks. So that was definitely a concern.
And maybe that's good news for you to hear, Mallory, because the deer hunting's coming to your neighborhood.
Cool. So with the background sound of the police shooting range, I can also be dodging arrows. Really excited about this.
Exactly. Video game. But yes, the city has plans in the works for a few more parks, and that includes Shenley, Emerald View, and Highland Parks.
Now I'm imagining bow hunters chasing deer across like the Frisbee golf course in Shenley. The city's been through this pilot phase. I would hope that there's like some new learnings or some rules or something that's going to fuel the next round.
Megan, out of all of us, you're the only person who's actually been hunting. Are there any changes that stand out to you or anything that you wish the city was planning to do?
I mean, y'all remember the one I made fun of the most, that because in the pilot, field dressing of the deer was not allowed. I don't know how else to say this. It's where you like string the deer up and you do the cleaning and cut the meat out that you want and all the things. You had to do it off premises. And like the idea of hauling a deer out of the depths of any of these parks is just absolutely nuts to me. So I'm glad to see that Sophia has alerted me that there is apparently some kind of program for field dressing in the wild. I think that's a good improvement.
And some other improvements and updates include a minimum age requirement to participate as an archer. You need to be 18 years old. I didn't realize that this wasn't a requirement earlier. I kind of would have assumed that.
I was wondering if like, you know, did they have a bunch of kids from like an archery club sign up? Were they like high school sophomores that were part of this program? This was very confusing to me.
I think maybe they're just officializing it, but I'm not sure. I don't know who were the 30 archers that participated. If you're one of them, please let me know. I have so many questions.
Honestly.
And then another change is that there's going to be a maximum of 10 bow hunters assigned to each park instead of 15 people. Like, if you are picked as one of the bow hunters, you can't go to like any park you are assigned one of them.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And then a couple more updates. Hunters will also need to label their arrows. And it's also recommended that they use a tarp when transporting deer. And the city in their report said that this would be so people don't get upset.
I love that we're suddenly worried about people's feelings about the dead deer. Like, to me, this like reads as like somewhere in Frick or Riverview. I'm gonna say Frick. A deer was dragged out, leaving like a bloody smear across, and there were complaints. You know, like that's how that sounds to me.
Yeah, same here. Or maybe like a dog got too excited or something. I don't know. There are a lot of dogs in Frick. That's why I go all the time to look at them.
Can you imagine if your pup Valerie like just fouled the blood? Like, like as a dog owner,
Zero does really love to roll in the grass, and I'm just I'm imagining what might happen if there was a bloody patch of grass there. This is making me less thrilled that this is expanding to my corner of the city.
Well, so what's the timeline for the new round? When does that all kick off?
So this whole process starts pretty soon. There's going to be some meetings with city council and other groups, but signups for archers starts in mid-May.
Is it going to follow hunting season again? Because I don't think that's for a while yet.
Yeah, hunting season does not start in mid-May. I don't know how closely the deer management program is following state guidelines, but there's a long lead-up time to when the bow hunters would actually be allowed to hunt in Pittsburgh parks. So that would start around the typical hunting season. And to be selected as an archer, you have to enter your name into a lottery. But I'm guessing that there's going to be that skills test again, because the city's timeline includes two archery qualifiers. And unless there are more changes, if you want to sign up to be a bow hunter, you need to be an Allegheny County resident, have a clean criminal record, and a 2B antlerless tag. And my personal request for the city is I would like the qualifiers to be public, because I think archery is cool and I want to watch.
1,000%. I am totally in this for the sport of it all.
And for people worried about hunting in city parks, you will be notified ahead of time. The city's website and timeline says signs will be posted in the parks to let people know archery is happening. You can expect those to pop up around July and August, and then hunting will start in September.
Whew, well, something to look forward to for you, Mallory. Mm-hmm. Before we go, what will Jens be thinking about over the weekend? I suspect this is not going to be a moment of joy this week. It's been a lot of heavy news the latter part of this week.
Yeah. So, I mean, something I'm paying attention to, we all know workers at the Post-Gazette have been on strike for a year and a half, which is wild to think about. We've talked about this on the show before. 5 different unions at the paper went on strike over working conditions and benefits back in October 2022. Now one of the unions has settled its strike, the one representing truck drivers. What we know at this point is that the Teamsters are getting severance payment from Post-Gazette management and will dissolve their union.
Whoa.
So, yeah, it's not too surprising then that the Communication Workers of America sent out a press release expressing disappointment with the Teamsters. And I'm going to be curious to see how this affects the larger strike and where the other 4 unions go from here.
Yeah. And a reminder, too, just that the Pittsburgh Newspaper Guild, which represents newsroom staff, so reporters, photographers, they're just one of the unions that's still on strike, along with others that represent folks in advertising, design and production. Sophia, what about you? What are you going to be thinking about?
So Norfolk Southern has agreed to pay a $600 million settlement. This money is going to class action lawsuits after the train derailment in East Palestine. And some of this money is also going to residents within a 10-mile radius of the crash that were affected by the disaster. But some of the reporting I've read includes perspectives from residents living there saying these payouts aren't enough. And people are still concerned about the environmental impact that this derailment has. So
yeah, I bet.
Yeah, while this reporting might not come out in the next week or so, I'll definitely be watching for any more updates about the cleanup process and resident concerns.
Yeah, and I have 2 this week, if you'll bear with me. Number one, the leadership from Japan has been at the White House this week. And among other things on the agenda is this pending sale of U.S. Steel, which is headquartered here in Pittsburgh, to Nippon, which is based in Japan. We've done a show about it not long ago. We'll put it in the show notes. But it's just weird. And analysts this week have been saying that it's not really normal for a president to be weighing in this way, which is not perspective I've seen before, I guess, because Biden's so pro-union and he launched his campaign for president here at the Teamsters Hall, and he marches in our Labor Day parades. So it's just gotten really messy and complicated. I'm curious to see what folks are going to be saying at the conclusion of these meetings. And also, there's a new ghost bike downtown. They're like the white bikes that get installed, unfortunately, where cyclists, pedestrians, sometimes car drivers die. It's a bike when it's a cyclist. So it's at the corner of Stanwicks and Liberty for a cyclist that was killed in late March. His name was James Mills. And yeah, I'll just be thinking about and hopefully honoring a life that should not have been lost, especially just a few weeks after Mayor Ganey announced his plan for Vision Zero. It's just terrible timing and really sad that someone died. That's all for today here on CityCast Pittsburgh. Our music is by Benji. Mallory Falk is our executive producer. Sophia Lowe, a.k.a. Al Mooman, and Noah Snyderman produced the show. Francesca DeBecco and Natalia Aldana wrote our newsletter. And I'm your host, Megan Harris. We'll be back on Monday with more news from around the city. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Yes, I'm also stopping because fire trucks. Could be an ambulance. You know, if I'd known I'd be recording, I maybe would have not picked a house next to a fire station and 2 hospitals.